Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the d'Amico International Shipping third quarter and 9 months 2018 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Marco Fiori, CEO of d'Amico International Shipping. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to our third quarter conference call. I'm here, it's kind of an important conference call, this, because I'm sure you've been following what's been happening with the company. And I'm here as usual, sitting next to me there is Carlos Balestra, who's the CFO of the company. And also sitting with us today, there is also Mr. Paolo D'Amico, who used to be the chairman of the company, and with my announced resignation as of 12:31, he's going to step in my position also as CEO of the company. So there's going to be more of a typical figure of a chairman and CEO, and we can talk about this later on. But I think I'm sure you'll have some questions also on the step forward. Now, going back to business, let's start from page 4, the executive summary. This is the usual format we use. Net results is not a very enticing figure. It's been 41.2 million for the first 9 months of 18. And in the same period last year, we had 13.6 in 2017. The big number of these 41.2 has been 21 million in Q3 18. That you can compare it with 7.4 million in Q3 17. Why this happened? The beginning of the year has always been a very soft market. We've been discussing about this. We're all expecting a recovery that everybody's expecting. But in the third quarter of the year, that was a particularly difficult and negative market we've been facing. Not to justify it, I think for all of you that follow the industry, the results of D'Amico are in perfect line with the results of other companies operating in the industry in this kind of market. So it's not more of a problem of D'Amico, but let's say a generalized problem of softness of the market. Naturally, we've been doing as point two to increase our liquidity, which is always very important, a certain number of sale and lease packs. In Q1 18, we did one MR, and then there was a sale and term charter back. That was a proceed of 20.3 million. In Q3 18, we finalized another sale of another NDM lease back and another MR, generating 14.3 million. And finally, in October, we did another one that generated 13 million. All of these transactions, let's say most of these transactions, have been done with Japanese partners, where we have a great access, and we can say that they've been done at very strong market levels. Spot TC, spot rates was 10,500 average in the 9 months of 18, compared with 12,290 in the same period of last year. This you can understand very quickly. We're talking about $2,000. On a larger fleet on the spot, but as you know, we've not been trying to cover aggressively because we didn't want to lock in the rates of these levels, so naturally the volatility tends to increase. Coverage, 32%, 0.5% of the total employment was covered through three contracts, with an average rate of 14,858. Last year was 33.6, so a little bit higher, 15,573. Now, this has been part of our usual strategy that we always had from the beginning of the listing of this company, of having a core fleet always on the market with a strong TC level. Now we're on the bottom edge of the band because we're below the 40%. But this is the result of a persistent negative market and therefore erosion of the TC coverage, not wanting to increase it at these levels. TC out contracts, we've been fixing some continuing our activity of TC contracts, 7 MRs for periods between 12 to 32 months. But the most important thing of this point is that we have reduced our TC-in fleet, letting expire some ships that were expiring, and those that we couldn't, we wanted to keep for commercial reasons. We figured out with our customers a way of keeping them under some kind of commercial management, in which is kind of neutral on our working capital base, but generating in addition some commission income in the tune of about 2%. Last but not the least, strong financial support of the D'Amico Group. As you know, we are part of a very strong group, D'Amico, that Italian company, has a considerable share of the company. I think the last number is about 65%, and they've always been present in our life. So they've been present in good times, but they've also been present in bad times like these. They have been there supporting us through a series of transactions. We represent a very strong brand name. They are there to remain, they are there to support us, so I think that this is important feedback we can give. And just to give you some numbers, as you can see, the support has been, you know, it's not just lip service, but it's also been in dollars and cents. 34.8 million was underwritten, their pro rata share of the 34.9 million capital increase in May. They exercised 100% of the warrants deriving from the previous capital increase. And as of September, they've been providing financing facilities under form of long-term debt, and some of it is also being furthermore subordinated in order to support our financial partners, which are the banks that have been supporting us. And this last part, the latter part of this, is 15 million, which was subordinated to everybody else who had a secure position in the company. Page 5. Fleet, no big change, just only to say usual things, average age of 7 years, so much younger fleet, 22 new buildings ordered since 2012. We're getting to the end of this new building order, only two ships to be delivered, so we can say that when we did this order, the market, the rates, the price actually, sorry, here we always talk about rates, the price at which we ordered it is inferior of what is today's price to do a new buildings. So I think was a very good strategic decision, was decided to renew the fleet in the right moment. Prices have been going up. The only thing is that market has been turning a little bit different from what we expected. So we expected a larger contribution from market rates, which didn't come. However, through our financial position and everything, we have been able to finish our new building program. Two ships to be delivered, and the important thing about the two ships to be delivered, there's already financing committed by our banks, our core banks, so as Carlos then can give you the remaining part of the capex, anyhow, we're finishing at this point. So we go back at the bottom of the page. This has a modern fleet for sure, balanced mix of owner and TC vessels, and a strong relationship with key market players, which have always been our partners. We can move down to page 7. Historical MR and spot rate values, nothing to be said, kind of self-explanatory. You can see that we're at the bottom of the range, so well below historical averages, so there is a strong potential upside. To be considered also, in when we talk about potential upside, the fact that if there is any kind of uptick on the market, as we are suffering a lot of ships on the spot on our results, any kind of uptick on the market will be captured very quickly also on the upside. And I think then Carlos can give you some sensitivity figures which will be making this point a little bit more plausible. Page 8, 1 year TC, non-eco rates. Also, this has been going down, as you can see. However, it has to be said that for eco ships, we've been doing some very interesting TCs in the range of $15,000 per day with some major oil players where they want to secure eco tonnage, quality tonnage, well-managed tonnage. So we have some key partners of ours who are willing to pay superior rates or above what it is, these kind of rates we're seeing here for non-eco ships in order to secure this kind of tonnage. Page 9, this we've seen it before, through of the refined product grade still continuing, 3.8 average 2000 to 2018 at 3.8 combined average. I've seen this number fluctuate from 4% to 3.8%, but we're always around that range. As we have always showed, the percentage of the OSC bond trade as a percentage of the total trade has been passing in the last 18 years from 25% to 35%. There is a market in expansion, and within a growing market, there is also a growing segment of the one where we are operating. Page 10, refining throughput, total industry power stocks in OECD. You can see that there's been a more rationalization of the stocks. Stocks have been going down. Now there's been a little bit of a build-up. However, the trend is still for a destocking, which is still a good thing for us. There was an upswing and downturn in freight rates since early 2013, and that is in part attributable to inventory cycle, where there's been an overstocking, and then we had to wait for a destocking. We're starting to see this starting to happen. Page 11. One thing about notable on this slide, actually two things. You can see the product seaborne trade is starting to bounce back. We see a little bit less flattening the curve, but potentially we see the forecast is moving up, the blue line on the left. The pie chart up right, I think the main thing to bring home out of this chart is that 73% of the planned refinery additions are in Asia and the Middle East. Why this? Why it should be an important number? Because as refining is concentrating in those areas of consumption remain far away, and therefore there's going to be more and more need to transport these products. Just to support that what we're saying, if you go to page 12, main slide, the main chart here is the one on the right, where you see the European refining capacity 2007, 2018, which went up as a blip in 2018, but you can see clearly that there's a strong downside trend. Europe, which is still the major consumer of refined products, is slowly refining less and less and less. Relying on the page before refineries, which are being built far away, and therefore creating ton-mile demand and need for ships to distribute its products. Furthermore, 2020, big change in IMO regulation, limiting sulfur content to 0.5%. What's going to be created a whole new market, and compulsory, so there's nobody who can make a choice, which is going to bring inefficiencies, bottlenecks, where it's going to be larger need for ships to straighten out these problems. We'll see it also in the next page. There's going to be also in the next pages, there's going to be something a little bit more in detail. Page 13, CapEx. You can see this from the bottom of the price of oil, 2016, where there was a global CapEx of exploration and production, has been starting to grow as the price of oil has been growing. It's very tied, the two things. Price of oil is growing, and therefore there's going to be more expensive expenditures for exploration and production. Non-OPEC oil production versus on OPEC, call on OPEC. It's kind of evident from what we read, from what we see, that the big provider, the big swing factor that used to be very much the Saudis, is turning to be more and more the Americans with the shale oil. Therefore, there's going to be more export of crude of the United States, that now is allowed, and there's going to be more refining and export of refining. On this point, if you turn the next page 14, you can see that there are some captive markets very strong linked to the United States. Brazil has been growing dramatically, importing products from the United States. The second part has been also Mexico. Actually, I was surprised myself about these statistics. Mexico has became the largest product importer in the world. In Mexico, there is a number of refineries that have been planned to be built, but I think will take some time. For the time being, local inefficiencies are being covered by growing imports from the United States. There is a huge trade that's been created between the United States and Mexico. Brazil also slowly is recovering from its economic problems, so it's becoming also another captive market, very strong in South America. South America in general is a very strong market for U.S. refining products. We would like to also to remind you, we have a joint venture with FLOPEC, which is the Ecuadorians. Ecuador is a big oil-producing country, but they don't have any refining. So what they do, they export crude to the United States, and they have to import products in Ecuador. And we are part there of a joint venture with the local oil companies and with other shipping companies to provide this flow of products coming into Ecuador. Page 15, implication of IMO 2020. All of you heard a lot about this. I think that we try to give a little bit here some kind of clarification. By far, it's not going to be the final word on this, but there are some interesting conclusions. So 2020, it will start in January 1st, the limitation to vessel of burning sulfur products with maximum content of sulfur of 0.5%. Two ways of doing this: either you burn products with low sulfur, below 0.5%, or you use cleaning systems on board of the ships, everybody has heard talking about by the name of scrubbers. What will this mean? I think the scrubber production, the first point is kind of interesting. According to Clarkson, 442 scrubbers have been ordered for installation tankers by 2020. The current order, more or less, depending big size, small size, I think varies from 4 to 6%, as again general. Just to keep an idea, an order of magnitude, the total ships operating in the world are over 90,000. So we're talking here of really fractional numbers. This is 5,000, 5% about this number. What is everybody else going to do? Two solutions: slow steaming, as you can easily understand, you're trying to consume the least possible of the more expensive fuel, which will be the low sulfur fuel, or otherwise the scrapping of all that tonnage and starting to move to more efficient tonnage, which is the eco tonnage. What other inefficiency is going to be created is what you're going to do of the high, because you still need high sulfur fuel oil, which will be needed by the ships who have scrubbers. So the ships who have scrubbers, in order to benefit of this fuel that will be selling at a discount, they'll need to find it everywhere in the market. So potentially you'll find there's going to be need for floating storage, and also big distribution problem. Retrofit of scrubbers, naturally, if you want to retrofit scrubbers, you'll see a part of the fleet will be moving to the shipyards, so reducing the number of ships on the water. That is positive. Additional need to distribute gas oil and low sulfur fuel oil, more ships distributed on this trade, it's a positive. Part of the high sulfur fuel oil will have to be transported by ships to other places where it can be constantly refined. This is a positive because we'll be occupying ships. Dislocation in production of sweet and sour crude. Why? Because sweet crude that has lower sulfur content to begin with, it is much easier to refine in order to obtain a low sulfur final product. But then this will change all the mix of products, all the mix of crude oils being moved, and there is already the wide swing between sweet crude, which has lower sulfur oil, to strong crude, which has a higher content of sulfur. So you start seeing also a lot of dislocation also in the crude market, but also this is positive. And then, as usual, for the refining capacity, it's going to be good. Refiners will be making more money. The spread on refining will be growing. So what we'll have will be a positive, because there's going to be an incentive in refining more and therefore move more products around the world. So all of these, we just wanted to put on a page, just the plus and minus of everything, so that I think that most of them point to a positive implication. Then one implication that is not here, but I think has to be kept in mind, is that shipping normally thrives when there are inefficiencies and bottlenecks. And this is going to be a major regulatory change, bringing in efficiency and bottlenecks. So this is going to have 99% a positive impact on the market. On looking on the supply side, fleet growth, page 15, we can see that it's still very subdued. And I think also what's interesting to see is that you can see on the right side that 21% of the MR and LR1 fleet, of 21% the tonnage-wise of this fleet, it is older than 15 years. We're discussing this morning, and ships older than 15 years are slowly, slowly getting less and less demand. So we think that for people who have a modern fleet, and with these kind of numbers, one-fifth of the fleet is older than 15 years, we think it is a very positive factor. Then, on the supply side, we're looking at what came in. Let's look also what goes out. You can see on the top chart, the number of deliveries is still growing down. You can see there's much less than what was the last year. For example, Q4 17 and 18 expected same numbers, but the actual deliveries in 17 have been much lower. So we expect also much lower this time. And constantly in all of this, with the exception of Q3, where you had 16 ships delivered against 14 expected to be delivered, but always all these numbers, there's been some slippage, where the actual numbers of ships to be delivered, the actual ships being delivered, has always been lower than those that were expected to be delivered. On the other hand, scrapping is still continuing to be kind of robust, and we can see that more or less in the first 6 months of 2018, the net between addition and scrapping was only 0.6%. So you can see that it's very much going towards a balanced situation. Why is this happening? I think for many reasons. Banks are less active in the financing of ships, so that creates less demand. I think there is also the fact that today shipyards consolidation, especially in the clean products, but especially also there's more conveniency, and you can see a parity curve, a new building parity curve on page 18 on the left. You can see that there is a very precise advantage at buying second-hand ships from having new builds. So I think that finally ship owners are starting to see the fact that they're better off in buying resales or second-hand ships rather than going out and ordering ships. Then there is also other reasons. Governments are less willing to support shipyards in a loss situation. So I think there is all things that are pointing that the supply side is still starting to get finally under control. And as a matter of fact, you can see the MR and LR1 orders has been going down, 50 units being ordered so far in 2018 versus 73 for the total year of last year, and so on and so forth. Last but not the least, seaborne volume, page 9, MR, LR1, fleet growth, a lot of lines, a lot of colors. The main thing to retain is that the product seaborne trade is starting to flatten out, starting probably to start rebounding pretty soon. In 18 started to rebound, so this is going to be the main leader for the next strong leg of this market, which, as we said, everybody is expecting in 2019, 2020. So it's not a matter of if, it's more of a matter of when. So the picture looking forward is kind of positive. I know we've been saying that, especially I've been saying that for a long time, but you know, I think it's very difficult to pinpoint a turning point in the market, but I think that we've been seeing really a flattening down, and at this point there is a strong consensus worldwide, analysts, shipping companies, brokers, everybody sees a strong rebound in the market. Page 21, I want to pass the word to Carlos, as CFO, that he can bring you down through these numbers, which he can give you more of a sense about it. Carlos.
Yes, hello to everyone. So looking at the financials now, As you all know, we underwent an important renewal of our fleet over the last few years. We ordered 22 new buildings for a total investment of $755 million. We now only have less than $60, $59 million in investments for two LR1s to be delivered in January and February next year, of which we have committed bank financing for both vessels, and our equity to be invested in these vessels we estimate to be around $23 million. So, of course, this figure is much more manageable. The large investments we have made over the last few years for the fleet renewal, combined with the weak freight markets, has put a strain on our financials, but the fact that we are now close to the end of this new building program is therefore positive for us. And hopefully, as we and most analysts expect, as we end arrive to the conclusion of this new building program, we will also start benefiting from a recovery in the markets, most likely already from the second half of 2019. And therefore, of course, the whole picture will change in terms of cash generation for us. If we go on to the next page, we show, the profile of our indebtedness in terms of repayments, balloons, and on the right-hand side, we show the ratio of this indebtedness relative to fleet market value. We have financing on two vessels, which actually mature on March next year, but we are assuming here that we will be refinancing this year. That is why you see on the gray bar at the bottom, minus 40 million. We are already in advanced discussions for the refinancing of these two vessels, so it will either happen this year or early next year. And then, in addition to that, we only have another two vessels of the JV we have with Glencore that have to be refinanced next year for an equivalent amount for us of $10 million. So we don't have an important refinancing risk here. And on the right-hand side, we show that if we can start earning enough to cover our cash break-even, our indebtedness ratios improve quite fast, as we were mentioning before, since our new building program is coming to an end, and also in addition to that, one of our debt facilities, which is putting quite a big strain on our cash, which is the medium-term facility which we have in Intesa, on which we have reimbursements of $15 million per annum, is terminating. It will be fully reimbursed by the end of 2019. If we go on to page 24, we show the percentage of our available days which are covered through long-term TC contracts. We have now slightly raised coverage relative to the previous quarter. We are at 40% for Q4 18 and 24% for 2019. Of course, the new contracts that we signed were slightly lower rates, so the average rates on the TC contracts came down slightly. They are now at around 14.7 for Q4 18 and 14.6 for 2019. It is slightly lower than what we usually aim for, but of course we will be looking for opportunities to fix more vessels on TC as the market improves. Going on to the following page, we show a fleet evolution in terms of average number of vessels. We are assuming here we are not going to be renewing the short-term TCN vessels as they terminate, and therefore we have this reduction in the fleet over the next few years, although the own fleet actually rises over the forecast horizon. And on the right-hand side, we show our exposure to the spot market. And for 2019, that came down slightly. We had around 39 vessels in both 19 and 20. Now we only have 36.7 vessels equivalent exposure in 19, which translates to a on a dollar equivalent basis for every $1,000
change in the TCE equivalent earnings
to a bottom line effect of $13.4 million in 2019, and just slightly more than that for 14.4 in 2020. So of course, with a market recovery, that shows you the potential upside that there are to our results. On page 25, not surprisingly,
given that the weak
freight markets and the sale leaseback transactions that we have been pursuing and that have been very important for us to raise the cash required to confront these weak markets, they nonetheless, of course, led to an increase in our total indebtedness position, net indebtedness position, with the net financial position rising from $510 million in December 17 to $588 million. Fortunately, fleet market value has kept up quite well, especially younger vessel values, as we saw previously in the presentation, have actually been rising over the last 2 years and are pretty steady this year. So total fleet market value has increased over the period to almost $800 million, and therefore this ratio rose from 66.6 to 73.7. As I mentioned on the sale leaseback side, we have generated $34.6 million in the first 9 months of the year through either sale or sale leaseback transactions, and which 14.3 million
in Q3.
Going on to the following page, we here show again the key financials for us, and in Q3 our loss again was of $21 million. There were not any exceptional items here to report of. The result is really attributable to the poor result, to the weak freight markets. And we are going to go into more detail about the results of our vessels trading on the spot market on the following page. Over the 9 months of the year, the loss was of $41 million. So on page 27, we show the results, the detail of the results of the spot vessels and of the vessels employed on time charters. And over the first 9 months, the average rate of our vessels on the spot market was of 10,570. But on Q3 18, it was of only $8,700, and this is unfortunately for our vessels trading on the spot market, the worst result of the last 10 years. It was exceptionally weak for a number of reasons, which Marco mostly covered already on the market section of the presentation. I would add also that there was a slightly longer than usual refinery maintenance cycle in Q3 of this year, as refineries prepare themselves for the IMO 2020 regulation. So refinery activity was particularly depressed in Q3 of this year. And a strong rebound is expected. The EIA expects an increase in refining volumes between October and December this year of 3%. So in only 2 months, a 3% increase, you can understand that on an annualized basis, that is a very important increase. And that should definitely contribute to a stronger market towards the end of this year and the beginning of next year. We are already seeing on the crude side an important spike in rates. Seasonally, crude rates tend to improve at this time of the year, but the improvement we are seeing this year is much bigger than we saw last year, and VLs are currently trading above $50,000 per day, with peaks seen at $70,000 per day. Suezmax and Aframax are also doing very well. And that bodes very well for us, because all of this crude that is being transported today is then going to be refined and is going to be then transported by product tankers. The very strong crude market is also meaning that some vessels which were trading on the clean market have been moving to the dirty market. So these are vessels which are, so there's going to be less competition around, there's going to be less crude vessels steaming clean cargoes in their maiden voyages. And so for the clean cargoes available, also there are going to be less vessels around to transport them, and that should also drive an improvement in the freight markets for us. This is already happening. We are seeing freight rates on the clean trades, which have improved already over the last few weeks, and we expect it to continue throughout the rest of the year. Finally, on page 28, we show how we have outperformed the Clarkson's average. Although the market has been very weak, our strategy of covering at least a portion of our vessels through TC contracts has continued to pay dividends, and our overall results have been slightly better because of that. That is it on the financial side. There's one last slide. Here we show the fleet market value. As I mentioned before, it is almost $800 million. We already mentioned how young vessel values have kept up quite well. It's, older vessel values have been kept down nonetheless. The NAV net, so if we the net financially net, is at around $210 million, which on a per share basis in US dollar translates to $0.21 per share. And at the 30th of September, that meant a 35% discount to NAV, where the shares were trading. Now this discount is more around 45%, so it is a very significant discount to NAV. As we have mentioned many times in the past, we have traded at significant discounts in the past already, but we also have traded for short periods of time at a premium. So when markets recover, of course, not only we will see an NAV improvement, but we will also be seeing a tightening of this discount and potentially a reversal of the discount. So,
okay. Carlos, thank you very much. So now you've got a little bit of a market feel, you've got a little bit of the financial field. Why invest in this today? Has not changed very much from the past, but just to go through the list, which you're aware, young fleet, this is still the case, first class in-house technical management. This allows us to have a relationship with all the most important clients. Invested mostly MR1, MR2, and now some ALRs. So very much players, niche, large players in niche markets, especially in the MR2 market. Prudent commercial strategy continues to be like that. Our coverage went below 40% just for intrinsic reasons of the weakness of the market in this moment, but normally would keep it between 40 and 60%. And this is what has allowed us to go for so long, still having some decent results considering the state of the market. International reach, 4 countries, say 3 continents. We're close to our customers. This is part of our strategy. Strong banking relationship. I can't stress this enough, how important it's been to us, for us having the support of our banks, which on the other hand was also been supporting. We've always been very cooperating, we always did what we told them we were doing, so it's very much been a two-way street where we've been keeping both sides our word and our strong respect and trust. Attractive valuation of this in absolute terms, what Carlos was saying, NAV discount of 35%, and very attractive market fundamentals. This has not changed, and especially matched with a NAV discount of 35%, having a larger fleet on the spot, at any instant the market tends to spike or tends to improve, we are able to pick up in full swing this kind of market recovery. This will carry me on at the end of the presentation. As I told you, here is also Paolo D'Amico, the three of us. So if you have any questions, we're all very happy to talk to you, and then we can talk about the next chapters. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The question is from Matteo Bonizzoni with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have two questions. One is on the rates evolution. You say that over the last few weeks or days there was an improvement compared to the weak performance that we saw in the 9 months, particularly in Q3. Can you elaborate a little bit more about the level that you are currently seeing, or the average if you want, if you prefer, since the beginning of the fourth quarter? Then on page 22 of the presentation, you show that you have these refinancing needs for 2019 in the region of $70 million. You discussed that you are in negotiation to address this topic. Can you elaborate a little bit about, for example, topics like the cost of debt for the newly issued lines should be materially different or different from the existing one? And then the third question, if I may, we have seen that the funding from the key shareholder has increased from $27 to $38 million during the quarter. Should we expect a further increase going forward? Thanks.
Okay. Matteo, hi. How are you doing? It's Marco. Listen, just to get back to some of your points, then some of them also, Carlos, especially on the second and third point, he can go. Rate evolution. So we have seen that rates have been moving from, in October, about 7,500 the spot. November has been at 9,000. And then since the beginning of November has been continuing to rise, and now we're talking about 13,500. What is also very interesting, what has been spiking very much has been the crude oil, so we start also seeing some of our ships that have been requested to transport crude oil with very interesting rates, 3-6 months contracts, 3 months contracts in the level of the $17,000-$18,000 per day. There is also a premium there because then you have to clean them, but anyhow, they're very hefty numbers, so we start seeing fuel oil is starting to move very well. So we start seeing, you know, what was a little bit anguishing of the summer of Q3 was the fact that it's not the market was low, it's just it was like a flat pulsation of the heart, so there was really nothing going on. Now finally we can start seeing some spikes, some movements, and things are starting to move. And it's not only us who's seeing it, we're all seeing this. On the second question, sorry, if you can refresh my memory, I didn't jot it down.
Yeah. The refinancing of $70 million that you discussed during the call, just to understand okay. What kind of...
This is Carlos' territory, and I'm very happy to pass it to him.
No, so the refinancing need, just to make the, it's not 70 million, it's we have 40 million that we show in Q4 18, and another 10 million in 19, and the 40 million is associated with two vessels, which I mentioned, the existing facilities mature in March 19, so we still have quite a lot of time to refinance these. We do expect, however, there's a good chance we might be refinancing them already in 18. If it's not in 18, it's going to be early 19. So here we show them in Q4 18. We are in advanced negotiations with banks for this. The terms are not materially different from those we have achieved in the past. They are maybe slightly more expensive, but they're not materially different. We cannot give more information at this stage, but we will, of course, once you see our financials and this is signed, we do provide the details of all of our financings in our annual report, so you'll be able to gain access to that. But as we always say, we are fortunate to have very strong banking relationships, and our banks continue to support us. Finally, on I think the third question was also of a financing nature. And you asked us if the shareholders' loan provided by the controlling shareholder of $38 million will be increasing. Of course, that will crucially depend on the results that we will achieve in Q4, and also on the refinancing operations that we are working on. We continue to work on a number of sale-leaseback transactions that we are going to be closing between the end of this year and the beginning of next year. And depending on the timing of these transactions, there might be a need for additional support by the controlling shareholder. But then as these transactions materialize and we cash in on these deals, we will be able to most likely reimburse part of any additional loan that they provide to us.
Matteo, on this point, I would like to add one thing. Look, as you know, I'll be leaving as CEO at the end of December. I've been 22 years with D'Amico, 11 years plus with this. Known the two main shareholders who own the 64% of the company for many years. I think that we were very lucky to always count on their support. I also think that for the banks who are also listening to us, it's not in our style. There was always difficulties in the market. Nothing was ever requested to our banks. We strongly believe that everybody has to do its share. Now, this is what I always believed, and this is what I believe the people who are going to remain are going to believe. So I think this is good news, you know. As was written, you need everything to change for everything to remain the same. I think there is a very much a consensus of view on these strong statements. We are lucky, we never broke a covenant, and we don't expect to do that in the future. So this end of the story.
Okay, thanks.
The next question comes from Luigi De Bellis with Equita SIM. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon.
First of all, I'm disappointed you're the second, not the
first. Yes, I imagine, because it's the second question. However, two questions. The first one, just a clarification. Could you quantify the CapEx expected by year-end? Because $59 million is the number for 2019, or the overall remaining CapEx, including Q4 cash out? And the second question, sorry, but still on the financial structure. What could be the strategy if the market does not recover in the coming months or remain below break-even point? Can you mention the main covenants on debt? Thank you.
Let me give you first the second question, then also Carlos can fill in my second question and still answer the first one. Look, the covenants are known on all our financing. That mainly is a liquidity covenant, an equity covenant. That's why we're subordinating some debt, mainly from the parent company. The strategy is very simple. You know, like we were the first to do sale and leasebacks. We'll continue to looking at that. We're going to look at some disposal of assets. Like I told you, Luigi, at the beginning, it's not if the market will recover. The question is when. Naturally, if this happens in 10 years, I think we're all out of our business, everybody. I don't think there will be that time. You know, the same strategy, you can see it done in Scorpio, in Armor. So it is mainly a strategy of trying to shed as least possible assets, try to keep the lowest break-even point as possible, trying to keep control of the fleet. You know, these are all the things that you try to do. Then if you tell me, you know, Kane said it rightfully, so in the long term we're all dead, you know, depends how you want long term. So Luigi, I think we have a long runway still to go. So, you know, this is what I can tell you, you know, I think. Carlos can fill in on this question more practically. I just gave you the philosophical answer and then the first question.
Yeah, no, it's, our covenants, I believe you know, I mean, it's the equity to total assets has to be at least 35%. A minimum liquidity of $25 million and a minimum shareholders' equity, including subordinated shareholders' loans of $100 million. And also for the equity to total asset ratio, the subordinated shareholders' loans count as equity. And that is why we did subordinate $15 million of the shareholders' loan at the end of September to be able to respect this covenant. That strategy going forward to be able to address our funding needs is more of the same, I would say. Of course, we might be needing a bit more equity, and we can achieve this through a subordination of the shareholders' loans, as we have done on the 30th of September. And we are going to be pursuing more sale leaseback transactions. We have been redelivering some vessels which we had on TCN with some working capital benefits for us of around $800,000 per vessel redelivered. So more of that is probably going to happen over the next few quarters. And on the capex, the total capex that you see there is in 19. We don't have any more yard payments scheduled in 2018. So all of that is in 19, and it is the capex is associated with the last installment on the two LR1s to be delivered, one in January and one in February of last year.
Okay, thank you. And just a last question.
Just to mention also, I mean, I mentioned this previously in the call. I mean, one of the things which is absorbing cash for us is this medium-term facility with Intesa, which we are reimbursing very fast. So there's only 25 million standing, and it will be fully reimbursed by the end of the year.
Okay. Okay, thanks. And just a last question. When do you expect the first impact from IMO 2020 on spot rates?
Paolo D'Amico can answer to this. Look, he's much more qualified than all of us. Look. So we have this privilege of having him here.
Good afternoon to everybody. We expected in the second half of 19, because the various bunkering hub they need to replenish, and either of the 0.5 product if where it will be available, and of course of middle distillate, because the middle distillate is going to play an important part of the whole thing. We will see probably many type of arbitration between starting from the crudes and going up to the fuels. I think there are a lot of people out there talking about this, and I don't want to increase the number of voices on this subject, but I'm pretty sure that to be ready by 2020, which is January, with a certain element of flexibility up to March, but it's not very clear yet, so don't take it for granted. So let's say 1st of January 2020, the system has to get prepared, start getting prepared in June, starting from June 2019.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Luigi, I'll miss your questions. You got emotional.
Okay, next.
The next question comes from Andrea Bonfà with Banca Akros. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon to everybody. My question is again on the introduction of the clean fuel in 2020. I do apologize, maybe you already partly answered the question, but the line was not particularly clear. So I would like to again to ask if you can elaborate on why this might be an opportunity for your industry in terms of other higher volumes or higher rates in due course. Thank you very much.
Andrea, look, it's Marco. I think
there is some analytical answers and some out-of-the-box answers. The out-of-the-box, as I told before, there's going to be a lot of disruptions, inefficiencies, and bottlenecks created by need to distribute all over the world new product, which is the low-sulfur fuel oil. At the same time, it's not that you can forget the high sulfur, because there will be the shift with scrubbers. So there's going to be a new product to be added wherever in the world. So some ports will have it, some ports don't have it, some ports will need to have it. So there's going to be a lot of disruption all of this. Then there is also on the refinery side. Some refineries won't be able to refine it at low sulfur. So there's going to be cargoes from one refinery that's less efficient to refineries that are more efficient, which will be able to extract the sulfur and sell it as low sulfur. So that's also a new business being created. Then there is the fact that some areas of the world do not produce low sulfur, so you'll have to bring it to those areas from where it's produced. So you can see that when you have these big regulatory changes, like was for the double hull, there is always big disruption. And normally out of these big disruptions, shipping is the big winner. So I think there is some business answers, but there is also some answers that are kind to be proven, but we all feel very strong about this.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Thank you very much. Look, I want to thank you for having been patient with us, especially with me all these years. Look, I think if you had a good experience with me, you'll have a much better experience with Paolo as the new CEO. And if you were not happy with me, you cannot be unhappy with Paolo. So it can only improve for you guys. So look, good luck. I really will miss a lot all of you. I will miss a lot D'Amico. But I think I see very, very rosy and shiny, nice days ahead of all of us. So I won't be leaving the industry, but this is another story. But whatever happens, I think you chose the right thing to cover D'Amico, to be interested in D'Amico, to support D'Amico, the banks are here. And I think you did the right choice, and you will never regret it. Thank you very much.